In my office at home, my psychotherapy office, I have a few plants. And sometimes I walk into the office after the weekend and I'm greeting a client and I notice my plants are like... And there's a moment to hear two voices inside. One is what I'd call the perfectionist voice that some of you, maybe most of us in some ways are familiar with, that has a very particular tone to it that says, oh, look at you. You know, you can't even take care of your plants. And here's your client seeing this drooping plant. You know, how good are you as a psychotherapist? You know, and you usually make a little joke about it. But the other voice says, "What a gift! What a gift to both you and your client that your vulnerability, your humanity, your imperfection is on display." And it's a very different voice, isn't it? It's a really different voice. And some of us know that Native American story, you know, which wolf do you feed? You know, I like wolves too, kind of a totem animal for me. It makes sense that the voice to listen to is the voice of wisdom, is the voice of wisdom and compassion, but definitely wisdom. So the thing about these plants is that they're called prayer plants. So, and to add to the perfectionist part, they're plants that were gifts at my father's funeral. What I've learned about prayer plants is they're very forgiving. Something, a trait my father actually didn't have in his blessed Irish countenance. He was very loyal, but... forgiveness was, in his own words, was not his forte. So these plants are so forgiving that by the end of the hour with the client, after a drink of water, it's an amazing experience. Actually, not that I feel great about their, you know, not attending to them, but it's such a teaching from them about capacity, you know, capacity to survive through a drought and to come back again. And I do experience them. I really do experience them as forgiving me. It's quite a powerful experience. And it's not that I haven't brought mindfulness to remembering to water them more frequently, okay? So that's part of our practice. It's not like we just see it, oh, there it is, oh, okay, everything is okay. It's like it's information. But even with information, our habits show up again. And that's kind of a working edge in daily life practice, just like it's a working edge in formal practice or retreat. You know, and after many, many years of practice, sometimes a perfectionist voice will say, well, after all these years of practice, and after all these years of psychotherapy, and after all blah, 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 there it is again. You know, you're late again. You know, or something. You know, something. And it's just that, again, that invitation to be generous and wise and compassionate with being human. This is one of the, we could call the, someone in my, one of our small groups used the word shadow. You know, what's your shadow side? This is my languaging, not in Buddhist scripture, of course, but I think the shadow side of Vipassana practice, which is very, you know, it's a beautiful form, really, the simplicity of the sitting and walking. But the shadow side of that teaching, if we don't understand it clearly, is distance, is disconnection, is disconnection from our direct experience. It's like, okay, see it, I see anger, I see anger, I see anger. You know, where is that, you know, where is it, are we meeting it with compassion? And where is that subtle, like, I'm not going to really deal with that. Because it's not dharma. You know, it's not. Like those difficult emotions we can tell ourselves are some kind of failure of our spiritual practice or our human practice. It's just not true. It's just not true. We're breathing, feeling, thinking, imperfect, imperfectly perfect human beings. And we all share that. So when I think about going home on a retreat, I think about kindness and practice. I think about these two things, like what can we bring? What can we bring in our toolbox for ourselves as we make that transition? Because the truth is we don't know what's next. We have a plan, you know, and we need our plans, you know. No, hopefully my ride's going to show up today or else I'll miss my plane. But there is, we have a plan about getting home, we might have a plan about what's happening later, or maybe we don't. But we really actually do not know. Some of you have shared the most powerful and heartbreaking and deeply inspiring stories about loss and change in your life and how you are meeting that and working with that. So many people, including us as teachers, have spoken about the awe, really, of your integrity and your practice and your courage. And you might say, well, I don't have a choice, but, you know, which wolf do you feed? Is it self-pity? Is it no? Or is it, okay, this is what's here. This is what's in the bowl, like it or not. So in our toolbox, it might be that we can really pay attention, actually. One thing that's helped me a great deal in my practice throughout many decades of practicing, it's really simple. It's staying connected with my body in really simple ways, like step, 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 feeling the doorknob, feeling the steering wheel. Sitting on the toilet is a perfect opportunity because we're still for a little bit, you know, just really feeling body sensation. Going to bed at night, I find, is really a big doorway for me for practice because there I am. And so, you know, feeling the sheets, feeling, many of us have sleep problems. Sometimes you can just let yourself feel into the sensation of the blankets, the sheets. You know, letting yourself turn off the news, hopefully, you know, well before you go to bed. You know, bringing your attention to mindfulness of the body. You can do a body scan, or maybe you bring some loving kindness and just offer yourself loving kindness. Or if you're next to someone in bed, offering them loving kindness. Or if your heart feels full, offering the world, you know, offering people, beings unknown. Those can be wonderful times to actually do some practice. It could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes or longer. Same when you wake up in the morning, even a few minutes just to connect with, wow, I'm alive. I mean, there's life, and opening to that, feeling your feet as soon as you get out of bed on the floor, you know, hand on the toothbrush. Just those kind of things in transitional times are really, really helpful to be mindful of the body. Because we tend to be caught in the mind and forget that we even have a body. So those are great ways to practice. And of course, it's also really helpful to sit if you can. You know, if you can even, doesn't have to be a half hour, 45 minutes. It could be 10 or 15. If you have a place in your house that you can designate as you're sitting. It may be a chair that you like, that you feel well supported, or maybe a corner in a room. Or maybe some people, they have a whole room, but you don't need that. You know, sometimes people find it helpful to have some kind of image, like a Buddha image, or maybe a heart, or maybe it's a poem or phrase that that you have, you know, in your refrigerator, just something to kind of also wake up the mind. So these are some things that are I find useful and really strengthening, like not to minimize it, like, oh, okay, that's just, you know, I'm just mindful of steps, you know, what a big deal. It actually is a big deal. It breaks that cycle of being lost in thought. So it's worth it. I mean, when I go up the stairs to my office, it's kind of built in, just step, just feeling the steps, and the mind shuts off for a while. So those are really helpful. The other thing is just to, and particularly for those of you that are, this is a newer experience being on retreat, but we all need this reminder, is just take care of yourself today, because you have been on retreat, and sometimes we just don't realize how sensitive we are. You know, our systems are rather sensitive. And just check in with yourself. I mean, quite honestly, I've left like a 10-day retreat and gone to a party, and it was fine. And another time I've left a retreat and gone into a grocery store and just like, kind of like that day, the other day, just get me out of here. So I think you really have to tune in, if you can, if you're able to. Some of us maybe don't have the option of that, choosing where we're going to be. But if you can, take some time to go a little slower today, if it's possible. And just take care of yourselves. And to remember that the other people in your lives, they haven't been on retreat. So sometimes it can feel a little coarse, a little bit like, they'll say, how was your retreat? And you're like, oh, well. And the next thing you know, they're like spacing out or, you know, asking another question, and they're not really interested. Try not to take that personally. It really, they haven't been on retreat. And it doesn't mean they don't love you, care for you. So say more in our closing, but these are just ways to really support our practice, and we'll say more in the closing circle, but certainly Sangha is a Sangha, we'll say more about it, but it's an important part, for me, of keeping my practice alive.
Thank you. So,
yeah. Say a few things about Sangha. Thanks, Jean. It took me a long time to to establish a daily practice of meditation, and I tried for years and with the best of intentions, and somehow it just kind of fell by the wayside, got forgotten, and then when I started going on retreats, I realized how nourishing it was. I realized that I needed to do this. I needed to develop to this capacity to have some space in the heart and the mind to be with my life as it was, and so. I wouldn't say every 100% every day, but it doesn't fall by the wayside anymore, because it's just as much as eating to nourish myself. I need to sit to nourish my heart, and I hope that you do really take this opportunity. There's something about having been on retreat that you know, where there's a kind of momentum maybe to to sit to, you know, maybe you've experienced a little bit of calm, a few breaths where the mind just is more quiet, and so. As Jean said, it's you don't need to sit for an hour, but you know, half an hour is good, 20 minutes. one little thing I'd recommend is that if you're going to sit, if you say, I'm going to sit for 20 minutes, sit for 20 minutes. Even if you don't feel like it, don't say, oh, this is no good, my mind's just wandering, and get up after 10. Make a commitment and fulfill that commitment. There's a story that Joseph Goldstein tells about, he gives like the extremes of commitment to daily sitting. And he said there's this one psychiatrist that he knows who I heard the story from him 20 years ago. So he said for 25 years, this psychiatrist has been sitting an hour in the morning and an hour every night, and he has a family and he has a practice, you know, a professional practice, and he never misses. So, and this person is still alive and teaching, so probably it's 45 years now. And so that's kind of one end of the spectrum. And then the other end is this actor in New York City who had this very busy life and, you know, all kinds of crazy hours and auditions, parties, and so he made the commitment that every day he was going to sit down on his meditation cushion. Even if he got up again, you know, a minute later. But there's something about that that actualizes your intention. Mm-hmm. So you're actualizing your intention, and then you might discover when you sit down, actually, you know what, I have 15 minutes. I don't have to have that second cup of coffee or whatever, or make that phone call or check my email. I could just sit for 10 or 15 minutes. So there's a lot of wisdom in that, just actualizing your intention. We really explored community and the power of community on this retreat, the power of human relationships and to offer support and to receive support in our practice, and in this practice, we could call it of honesty, of being truthful and loving in our lives. We don't have to call it Dharma. So it's just it's living in the best way we can. And so connecting with community, sometimes it's easy depending on where you live, depending on what's available. We have on the True North Insight website, there are sitting groups that are, some of them are actual True North Insight groups with teachers who are part of our larger community. So Claire, who offered Qigong and was with us, I didn't introduce her to everybody, and so I'm sorry about that, but Claire is one of our trained community meditation teachers and sometimes offers classes in Montreal. Pascal and I offer classes, and there are some other community meditation teachers as well in Ottawa, and there are some groups in Toronto. So the website is a resource. The website is also a resource in terms of hearing Dharma talks, and there's a reading list of recommended books. So check out our website. And I think that, you know, what Jean said about the body being such an ally in our practice, coming home to the body, and I think that that's something I also really want to echo. And for me, I can come home to my body. I can just feel my heart, feel the energy in my body, feel myself sitting, and it's a kind of a home base. It's a kind of an inner refuge that is there, and we can all develop that. We can all cultivate that we can be a refuge to ourselves. You know, I think that sometimes we feel like we have to escape ourselves, and it's really a shift in practice that we come to recognize that we can be a refuge to ourselves. just by stopping, just by, you know, stopping, you know, the leaning forward into the next experience or the leaning backward into what just happened and being ruminating over it. There's a little poem that I thought of that that I'd like to read. It's an indigenous story, elder story, rendered, retold by David Wagner in his book, The Heart Aroused. It's a collection that David White put together. So the poem is called Lost. Lost. So we may feel lost sometimes. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here. And you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen, it answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. Finally, I'd like to just end this time of our sharing before we open up to questions and answers with a forgiveness reflection. And I'm going to read it through twice. I'm going to read it through once, and you can listen to it. And then I'm going to read it through a second time. And if you like, you can repeat the sentence after me, or phrase. I'll go through it by phrases. If I have harmed anyone in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through my own confusions, I ask your forgiveness. If anyone has harmed me in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through their own confusions, I forgive them. And if there is a situation I am not ready to forgive, I forgive myself for that. For all the ways that I harm myself, negate, doubt, belittle myself, judge or be unkind to myself, through my own confusions, I forgive myself. So I'll read it again with some pauses, and if you like, you can say it after me. If I have harmed anyone in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, if I have harmed anyone in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through my own confusions, I ask your forgiveness.
Through my own confusions, I ask your forgiveness.
If anyone has harmed me in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through their own confusions, I forgive them. If anyone has harmed me in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through their own confusions, I forgive them. And if there is a situation I am not ready to forgive, and if there is a situation I am not ready to forgive, I forgive myself for that.
I forgive myself for that.
For all the ways that I harm myself, negate, doubt, belittle myself. For all the ways that I harm myself, negate, doubt, belittle myself. Judge or be unkind to myself. Judge or be unkind to myself. Through my own confusions, I forgive myself.
Through my own confusions, I forgive myself.
So we'd like to open it up to your questions. Unlimited time. We have about 10 minutes. And and you can address a question to one or another of us, or just not in particular, either one of us or both of us.
I can record this.
I was going to.
Oh, okay, sure.
So.
People feel comfortable.
Are you okay with recording, or I could turn it off if anybody prefers not? You can let me know afterwards if you prefer that I don't record it.
You can edit it.
Yeah. Actually, you know what?